G'day, welcome back to English History Fact and Fiction, episode the 180th, A New Hope. And speaking of New Hope, I had a look at an article where there's a thing that still happens I didn't know still happens, and that is Sanctuary. Yeah, Philadelphia, the Tabernacle United Church in University City, had a Jamaican couple in Sanctuary for 843 days. So this is one of these things where they have seven kiddies, and all seven of their kiddies are legally in the US. But of course, under Trump's America, the couple themselves are at risk of deportation. So, yeah, they spent all that time in Sanctuary, and it's turned out okay. The US government has allowed them to stay. So what can I say? Well done, the Tabernacle United Church in University City. But, of course, on the other hand, in the US, we've got the other story came out of Texas, where a pastor went into the Dunnies and he found a black guy hiding out there. Now, I don't know if that black guy asked for sanctuary, but the pastor in Texas decided the best way to handle that was to pull out his gun and point it at this black guy. So the black guy took the gun off the pastor and sent the pastor to heaven. Yeah, America, funny old place. Let's get on with it. Just a little bit of Rory Gallagher there, the Mississippi Sheik from about 1978, I think it was. Last week we had a lovely royal wedding, and we haven't been so happy since Hazra and Meg's, have we, my dear listener? It was going brilliantly well for Mary, who seems to also be up the spout. Not so brilliant are the dickhead men hanging around her. Really, I think she'd be better off without them. Also, not going well for Spaniards in general. We hate them, yes we do, we hate them. Religion not going well, and particularly for that poor old John Hooper, formerly Bishop of Worcester, who scored an agonising death on a slow fire, which included having his balls blown off. Oh dear. Having his nether parts burned and his bowels fallen out, he died as quietly as a child in his bed. And he now reigneth as a blessed martyr in the joys of heaven, prepared for the faithful in Christ, before the foundations of the world, for whose constancy all Christians are bound to praise God. All very nasty, though, Sam. Can we find some niceness this week? I don't like our chances. But there is a new hope, and that is that bun in Mary's oven. Hooper was not the only guy burned for heresy in February 1555. This is seen by conservatives as a long overdue reckoning of the filthy heretics, and Stephen Gardiner Bouhiss has come in for a bit of flack for being too soft on crime over previous years. Let's face it, ladies and gentlemen, heresy is crime against God. Is there anything worse than that? Not for this mob. I do not want you, though, to believe that bullshit about Stephen Gardiner Bouhiss being too soft on crime. He's just a pragmatist who didn't want to go too far too fast. That brings on rebellion. I take heresies in the church to be like boils in a man's body, which oversoon lanced wax sorer, and in time putrefy their matter. Yes, thanks, Stephen, that's a nice image just after breakfast. This is one thing that has united the council and the Queen. We all think the burning of humans is a great idea. And we've got Reg Pole in town who has been working on that stupid Councillor Trent, so he's hot to trot for burning humans. In fact, we might have a quick squeeze at a couple of Ridge's mates. Let's say hi to St. Cajetan. He's founded a fun-loving order called the Theatines, and of course, fun was definitely a no-no for them. It's back to good old-fashioned morality for them. Cajetan, who is still alive this time, he's not a saint yet, had been nabbed by Spanish soldiers during that sack of Rome. They decided to teach this guy how the Spanish are really, really good at torture by torturing Catatan. He will survive and form this mob, the Theatines, who still exist even today. Even though there's bugger all of them, there's some in South America, and of course, you've got to have them in the good old USA. The first superior of the order was Ridge's other BFF, Cardinal Giovanni Caraffa, who will become Pope Paul IV. Giovanni came to the Theatines from the oratory of divine love, and what Giovanni loves divinely is torture. He loves it so much he gets personally involved in the torturing of suspected heretics. And if he decides to torture you in that holy way with love in his heart, and you aren't looking like a Protestant, then he may have you in any way for suspicion of sorcery, immorality, blasphemy, witchcraft, or being a Jew. Paul IV, though, will eventually help cement Protestantism into England by saying all churchy stuff must be given back to the church. Our neighbours will be saying, fuck that, and fuck you, Pope. Point is, we've got Reg in England, and he hangs out with torturers and inquisitors. Old school bishops are all cheering him on and googling Amazon for bargain torture equipment. The optics, though, will be bad when Bishop Bonner publishes some articles that include the word Inquisition. Yeah, if there's anything we hate more than Spaniards, it's inquisitors, and we don't want any of those fuckers in England. New plan, so let's just keep on burning humans, but in secret. Worse, obviously. Our new guy, Spanish Phil, is the great-grandson of Ferdinand and Isabella, who started this whole Inquisition thingy, and Phil is firmly on Team Inquisitor. Worse and worse, Mary is the granddaughter of that very same Ferdinand and Isabella. Worse and worse and worse, we have Phil's dad and Mary's cousin, Super Sausage Chuck, and he's got about 30,000 German, Lutheran and Anabaptist burnings under his belt. Yeah, any time, my dear listener, that Christian whinges to you about Romans persecuting Christians, tell them the Romans were rank fucking amateurs. Good Christians like Super Sausage Chuck knew how to do that. We might, though, thank baby Jesus that Phil has the political sense to distance himself from the burnings. Back to Chuck for a tip. And he's burning about 70 to 80 humans every month at the moment. Phil will have his English chaplain preach against the burnings, but his Spanish chaplain, Alfonso E. Castro, was a professional prosecutor of Spanish heretics. Privately, though, Phil is such a big old Catholic that he wrote he wasn't happy with the English guys put on his staff because he felt they weren't Catholic enough. Now, don't ask me how you'd be Catholic enough. I don't know. A note from the future. Once Phil is King of Spain, he's going to ramp the Inquisition up, and he will even get in there himself personally with the odd box of matches to set fire to people. One poor bugger out of the torture lounge and onto the pyre will ask Phil why he has to die such a horrible death. Phil will say, "Had I a son as obstinate as you, I would eagerly carry faggots to burn him." While guys are writing for us about Phil's attitudes towards burnings, they are silent on Mary's attitudes. We do have some words from Mary herself that suggest she thinks it's just a temporary thing. Surely the heretics will see sense and come back to the true church. Council members will be told that at least one of them is to attend every burning to make sure there's no nastiness involved. Had Mary thought that through? This whole fucking thing is nasty, Mary. Touching the punishment of heretics, she wrote, "I believe it would be well to inflict punishment at this beginning without much cruelty or passion, but without, however, omitting to do such justice on those who choose by their false doctrines to deceive simple persons, that the people may clearly comprehend that they have not been condemned without just cause, whereby others will be brought to know the truth, and will beware of letting themselves be induced to a relapse into such new and false opinions. And above all, I should wish that no one be burned in London, save in the presence of some member of the council, and that during such executions, both here and elsewhere, some good and pious sermons be preached." Yeah, look, I think that perhaps Mary should set fire to herself so she understands what the fuck she's talking about. All I can say in her defence is she's just deluded the fuck out of herself with this stupid magic bullshit. Now, the biggest fans of burnings are, would you believe it, Protestants. They love the idea. They think it's brilliant. just that they want the Catholics to be doing the dying and not the Protestants. Now, they got that from Calvin, who I think we may have covered in the Reformation episodes before the theology made me want to remove my brain and flush it down the dunny. Calvin teaches us that it is heresy to not want heretics burned. Yeah, there you go. But for Calvin, of course, the heretics are the Catholics. Well, mostly. We also want to burn the Marianists as well, because they don't believe in the bread without yeast turning into the real baby Jesus. Now, Calvin has been in contact with the English. It had been Ted Seymour, super Protestant, who had his schooling from Calvin. And this idea that being against burnings was heresy caught on pretty much with all the Protestant faiths.
You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you, girl, we couldn't get much higher. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on fire.
Yeah, marvelous doors there. Ordinary Catholic types who speak against the burnings can now start filling up the stocks around the place. The balladeers who'd written songs about how great Mary was are writing new stuff about how shit the Catholic stuff is. Songs from the time of Henry and Teen King Ted about the Pope being a dick are also trotted out again. We even have those pagany type English making prophecies. Here's one. When boughs and branches begin to bud, two Marys shall go out of the tower and make sacrifice with their own blood. Now, don't ask me what it means, but it sounds nasty, doesn't it? Other prophecies are about the rise of Baby Betty following the death of Mary, and some of us have decided that Teen King Ted is not dead and will be back in the tick of the clock. Mary will try to stamp that shit out, but it's futile. You can't stamp it out. If the people are crapped off, they will let you know it and will get more. Now it's about Mary having a cushion shoved up her frock and she'll be passing off some other baby as our new prince. The Frenchies are helping the spreading of the rumours and looking to get a bit of rebellion going to put useless Courtney and Baby Betty on the big chair. Christmas, and it's the deal with the entertainment and joust involving English and Spanish. Overall, it will go okay with some incidents. A Spaniard will injure an Englishman in the church. Is that Catholic enough for Phil? Our Spaniard will score a branding on the forehead and lose an ear. Another Spaniard will kill an Englishman while two of his mates held the guy down. That's a bit rough, so it'll be hanging for him with Mary pardoning the two accomplices. Phil has decided to postpone his necking off to Europe until after the birth of the kitty. Easter and Mary can go into confinement. It'll be Hampton Court rather than Windsor or Greenwich. Hampton Court can be defended nicely, and the arsenal is just up the road in the tower, just in case we get a rebellion. To celebrate all this, Mary will invite some Franciscan friars and 16 Benedictine monks back from their exile in Flanders. Mary will meet them and have a nice boo-hoo-hoo of the happy variety before popping into a darkened cocoon. Oh, hang on, just before Mary goes into a cocoon, Baby Betty will be released from the slammer. Nice. Mary is now 39, so the doctors would have been apprehensive. 39's fine for you, my dear listeners, in the 21st century, but back then, yeah. It seems the physical health has improved during the pregnancy, but she's still suffering from depression. To cheer Mary up, they'll bring in a peasant woman with her 3-day-old triplets to show Mary just how easy this thing is. Then panic. Thomas Flower will rush on into St. Margaret's at Westminster yelling that the priest was an idolater and whack him a couple of times with a knife. This must be the signal for an uprising, so yes, panic. It's not a signal, just some bloke being a dick. The priest survived and Flower's off to the slammer. Why'd you do it, we want to know. It's the burnings, he says. The burnings have made it out to the countryside and the locals are not happy at all. Officials worry about their own safety at these things and the Protestants are instantly the holiest of martyrs. And so, rather than weakening the Protestant thing, it's been strengthened. But the people in charge never seem to get this stuff. Never ever. Let's bomb Baghdad, kill Saddam Hussein, and toss his army onto the unemployment scrap heap in a bombed-out country. That should solve all our problems, except our unemployed soldiers will all get together and say, how about we keep on with our hard man fighting and call ourselves something catchy, I don't know, like ISIS. Flower may have acted on his own, but he's inspired people, so there'll be a rise in incidents. Troop numbers will be increased. More guns will be on show. More guards will be placed at the gates. Nobles are gathering in London for the birth, so that's a good time also for weddings. Oh, there you go. We've gone back to happy stuff. So there is that, if you happen to be noble. 30th of April, 1555, just after dawn, and it's a boy. Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky there, and he said, I want to throw fucking everything at this tune. I want a full symphony orchestra, I want a full choir, I want church bells, and I want fucking cannon. Didn't get to the cannon bit, we might get there one day. Let's get back to our marvellous prince. A prince born handsome and without blemish, perfect in any way, and Mary had a perfect birth, little pain, and she's doing very, very well. Royal officials confirm the news. Ring the bells, set the bonfires without the humans on them. That's sort of bonfire. We're okay with those. No shops will open. Tables are set up with feasts on them. Wine is put on in the square. The clergy are out in force singing the Te Deums, and sailors heading out will take the joyous news to Europe. It will take just 2 days only for the congratulations to come in from Super Saucy Chuck. That's fucking lightning speed, isn't it? It's like email. Mary's other cousin in Antwerp has got the bells all ringing there, and we're having cannon blasting out everywhere. And hang on a tick. False alarm. Mary is actually still in the cocoon waiting for Labour to start. Oh, fuck this shit, say the Londoners, and the city is all gloomy. And in comes the news from Spain for Phil. Hey, Phil, your granny, Mad Juana, is dead. Phil has to go into official grieving, which means he's off to his room. On the plus side, Mad Juana was scoring 25,000 ducats a year, and Phil will now get that. But you and I, my dear listener, need to have a little chat with Frenchy Ambassador Knowles. He knows what's going on. Mary was totally shitty with Knowles over his support for the White Rebellion. Worse, we have about 200 young Englishmen hiding out in France, ready to come back any time there's an uprising. King Henri is helping these guys out with anything but cash and arms. Now, Mary had ripped it up Knowles over this stuff. He's got his spies in Mary's ladies, and they're the ones who are giving him the good oil. They've told him that Mary isn't even up the spout. Doctors haven't been going to tell her that. It's like telling King Donald that the election wasn't rigged. The ladies think that she's got a tumour growing inside her, not a baby. She hardly eats enough for herself, let alone for two. Knowles is writing to France saying, this is all a farce, and Mary is either a liar or a pathetic dupe. Okay with that, my dear listener? And just remember that Knowles, though, is biased against the Queen who ripped it up him and has had him in the slammer. Do you recall we had the quickening, where Mary first felt the baby move? Let me tell you more. I'll give you some more information here. Help you make up your mind. Her boobies have swollen up. Little drops of milk are seeping out. That doesn't sound like a tumour. Our ambassador might be hearing what he wants to hear, or he might not be asking the right questions, or maybe it's just that there's no medical science. What we may be dealing with here, and it's only a maybe, of course, is ovarian dropsy, which is where you get a cyst on the ovary, and that cyst grows and fills with liquid. It could also be a tumour of the pituitary endocrine gland, which will give you headaches and an oversecretion of hormones, including those hormones that make your breasts swell and excrete milk. It's a we'll-never-know moment, but do you recall that Catherine had that weird pregnancy where she delivered a dead baby, then thought she was still pregnant, until her swollen tummy went down? Whatever the case, I am sorry to inform you that Mary is not pregnant, but she's certainly likely to be suffering. The illusion will remain in place. King Donald will always know that the election was rigged, and Mary still knows that she is still pregnant. Doctors will help out, by double-checking their calculations and say it'll be June the 4th for the birth. Mary, though, will be sliding deeper into depression, and a lady's report she's sitting on the floor with her knees pulled up to her chin. Now, any heavily pregnant woman would be happy to tell you that you simply cannot do that. And you'd think that somebody would have had the balls to tell Mary that she wasn't pregnant. But no. 21st of May, and the swelling in her abdomen will start to go down. Doctors are saying, any day now for the baby? Fuckwits. Nobles hanging out in London are starting to get the shits. They want to go home. Common smelly types are talking up sedition. Mary's dead, they say. Let's have baby Betty's bouncing bum on the big chair. Teen boys are saying, I'm King Ted. No, I'm King Ted. Yeah, good way to get a whipping and have your ears off, lads. Phil's so worried he's written to Daddy for advice. It's not just the streets that are problematic. Skullduggery is going on at court. Who'd have thought that? Three English will steal a nice pile of gold and jewels from a Spaniard and be hung for their trouble. The mob will whip up outside the gate saying they're here to kill every last fucking Spaniard. Some Spaniards will come out for some biff, and biff we go with 5 or 6 dead and a few dozen wounded. Phil will try to hush it up rather than hit out with some punishment, so the English will be encouraged to get up to more mischief. Plans are made. While all this is happening, we still have international affairs being conducted. The plan is for the Frenchies and the Empire to kiss and make up, and the conduit was to be Mary. She obviously isn't attending, but we've got the meeting going on in Calais. The Frenchies will refuse to hand back land they've taken and want more. Empire wants all its land back in return for nothing. Stephen Gardner-Bouhiss will chip in asking the Empire to take pity on the Frenchies' infirmity. Now, the word infirmity at that time related purely to women, in that women could be infirm but men couldn't. Yeah. So the Frenchies are shitty at being called girlies. To help things along, here come a heap of Spanish troops. What the fuck, say the Frenchies. Now these guys are actually here in case Mary dies. They would leap into action and get into England to protect Phil. But the conference doesn't know that. Between dickhead Regpole and dickhead Gardner-Bouhiss, the peace talks are going nowhere. June 7th and the message comes in from England. Still no baby. Blessed relief then, because we're just going to call off the talks and all go home. This is bad news for Mary. God chose her to be queen so she could get the real religion back. Then he chose her to get up the spout with an heir, but that failed. Then he chose her to go to the peace talks to get that done so we could be all good mates and go and bash Muslim. And that's failed. People are starting to wonder if this pick by God is real after all. What's God got for Mary next? How about constant rain in England leading to crop failure? Nobody can remember the weather ever, ever, ever being so bad. Everybody's been waiting on the birth. Spanish nobles want to go back to Spain. English nobles want to go home. Phil thinks war is about to break out in Europe, and he was supposed to be there a month ago to take charge. Mad Wana must be starting to smell because a funeral is held on waiting for Phil. And it's raining. On top of all this, Phil and the Spaniards are broke, with no English willing to provide credit. Phil will have to get a loan from Flanders at 25% interest. No usury, it was a moral loan. He was also a bit of a figure of fun in Europe by now, with the ongoing saga of the pregnancy. Mary had spent time preparing letters of the baby to the Pope and the noble big dicks in Europe, and preparing passports for all the envoys that would be needed to take the news out. Meanwhile, in comes an envoy from Poland to congratulate Mary on the birth of a prince, so the word is still out in some parts of Europe that it had happened. In London, we had to bring in hard man William Herbert, Earl of Pembroke, to keep the peace. Pageants for the Feast of St. Peter and the Feast of St. John are cancelled. We don't want large mobs gathering. More burnings of Protestants will be carried out, and the ballads are now more about wicked Queen Mary, and others about fillers banging chicks while Mary is in lockdown. Riots break out in Devonshire and Cornwall, and William Herbert will need to leave London to sort them out. Word's out now that Mary has said that she refuses to go into Labour until every Protestant in the slammers are burned. July, and Mary is 11 months pregnant. Doctors and midwives say they can't give a date for the birth because magic stuff is happening. It's God's will, so don't ask us. By August, Hampton Court is on the nose. Now, we've talked about this before. In the absence of decent sanitation, the nobles' houses would just stink up after a couple of months, which is why they had a few of them. You just move on to a clean house and call in the clean-up crew for the place you just left. Making it worse is that constant rain. It's keeping everybody inside. Well, I do get to go out a bit, but that's just for the churchy stuff, where we all look up at the sky and ask God to stop the rain. We're bored, we're wet, we're smelly, the place stinks, so thank you when we get the news that we're on the move to Oatlands Manor. This, then, is finally the acknowledgement. Trump has lost the election. Mary's not having a baby. Phil's guys had steadily been leaving to head over to Flanders. War was way more fun than hanging out in England. Mary's ladies are given permission to go home. Kayleigh McEnany will hold a press conference so the population knows it turns out Mary's only 6 months up the spout, really, and King Donald is exploring his legal options because he won the election. These guys just can't face reality. The reported rebellions turned out to be not much at all, so it's all gone a bit quiet. People are currently more worried about starving than anything else. The fields are, like Hampton Court, smelly, with crops rotting. Sheep are dying and the price of sheep meat is through the roof. There's no grass for cattle or grain for horses. August is our month of happiness, usually, with the harvest coming in and we should be all fat and happy. But not this year. As Mary heads out, she will thank Mistress Frideswide Strelly for being the only person with the balls to have actually then told Mary the truth about her pregnancy. I see they were all flatterers and none true to me but you. At Oatlands, Mary will go straight back to her workload. In comes the papal ambassador, Noel's brother, our French ambassador's brother. He will find she's totally up to speed with the failed peace talks and she's blaming the Frenchies. I have obligations to my husband and his dad, so don't count on English neutrality forever, mate. It wasn't the fault of Pole or Gardner, so don't be blaming them. Yeah, it was, though. Finally, though, Mary will be able to say I was not pregnant. I doubt if King Donald will ever be able to say I lost the election, but that's another matter. For Mary, it's God punishing the English by not providing them with an heir. Phil will go to Oatlands, disappointed he hasn't got a kitty, but bonus is he's now King of the Netherlands. Super Sausage Chuck is an unwell emperor who needs rest and relaxation. He's not up to the job anymore. At the same time, Chuck's sister, Mary the Archduchess, will announce her retirement so Phil can be the sole ruler of the Neverlands. Having long been burdened with a sense of inadequacy, she had decided to follow his example and give up a throne. Realising that if Charles in his wisdom felt the need to retire, it was only fitting that she feel the same need, given her inferiority to him in every respect and the fact that she is a woman. Oh, don't sell yourself short, sweetheart. You've been a better ruler than those dickhead men. Mary has decided she wants to go to Spain to live with her sister Eleanor, widow of Frankie Big Nose. Phil, though, is in a bit of a quandary. He's smart enough to know that the Flemish hate him. He wants to leave England, but not really to go to Flanders, so he'll write to Daddy saying, oh, I want to go home to Spain. Please, please, please don't make me spend any more time in England. Yeah, nah, says Chuck, I'm going to retire in Spain, so you'll be needing in Flanders to kill filthy Frenchies. And if you go to Spain, you'll be too far away from England, but in Flanders you can pop back if you're needed. Now, Phil will drop in unannounced on Reg Pole. Hey, Reg, while I'm away, I want you to run shit here. Next day, he'll meet with the council. Hi, guys, Reg will be in charge now. He can do all the important stuff, and you guys can do the run-of-the-mill stuff. Phil didn't even mention Mary, but he's left her with nothing to do. Mary will ride out with Phil as far as Greenwich. It's a publicity thing, so Londoners can see she's alive. They may have been singing naughty ditties about her, but she's still the Queen, so there will be cheering and waving. 29th of August, and off goes Phil, with Mary being very sad, yet retaining the regal thingy. Mary can go back to her ladies for a good boo-hoo-hoo. The trip might be a bit tricky. The Frenchies had ramped up their privateers, and only a few weeks earlier, 17 Frenchy ships had burned a Flemish fleet. Phil has a travelling companion, Francisco de Ribera, who's been living in Peru. He's looking for the Empire to give him nice large land parcels of land in fee simple, that From Today and Forever title, in exchange for a shit ton of Peruvian silver. Ribera will tell Phil that he'd lost 50,000 ducats on the way to Europe when his treasure ship went down, but no worries, because those dear darling Peruvians will give him twice as much as that when he gets back. And what's in it for the Peruvians? Well, we'll be giving them Christianity, so they can go to heaven forever and ever. Amen. Yeah, shit, dear, look, that's even worse than taking the beads thingy. Even today we have tons of humans, though, happy to give over their silver to smooth-talking Christians in exchange for something those Christians will never, ever have to deliver. Phil is pretty broke, so he will be very matey with Francisco de Ribera. He likes the idea of that Peruvian silver. Now, Phil will actually cop fair weather and good tides after 3 hour crossing the Flanders. Now, my dear lady listeners, Mary will write long, long letters to Phil every single day. Is that not sweet? Phil will send the odd text back and they'll get fewer and fewer. Imperial Ambassador will be called in by Mary, who can't help but having a tear in her eye, saying, I haven't heard from Phil in a whole 7 days. She's writing to Super Sausage Chuck also, saying, there's nothing in the world I want more than my dear King's presence. Is this good for a mental state, I wonder? No, I don't wonder. It's not good for a mental state, all this mooning over Phil. Mary will get more friendly with Reg Pole, who is pretty much acting as regent. He's moved into Phil's apartments and is providing solace to Mary. He's a reminder of their kind of shared childhood and of England's reunion with the one true real church. Mary can also have fun, restoring the Franciscan Abbey at Greenwich, the one where she was christened. It's to be the first of the restored abbeys and monasteries, and before you know it, we'll be paying tons of guys to say prayers to get our loved ones out of purgatory, which has been reinvented for us. She's even got ancient Friar William Peto, who heard the confession of 7-year-old Mary. Fuck, mate, what has a 7-year-old got to confess? I covet my neighbour's Barbie. Reg will write to Phil to let him know what Mary's up to on a daily basis, so we know. Up early and pray all fucking morning. Then on to work and work hard. She works so hard, Reg is constantly telling her to take it a bit easy. Then it's discussions with the dickhead councillors and ambassadors, petitioners, and supervising the drafting of documents and letters, then writing long letters to Phil at night. Reg, in fact, is worried about her health with all this work going on. So it's come back soon, please, Phil. Worse for Mary, we have zero idea when Phil will be coming back. The abdication sounds easy enough, but of course it's got to be a huge fucking deal. These royals make a rod for their own backs with the protocol bullshit. There has to be a ceremonial takeover by Phil in every town in the Netherlands, well, the main ones, and he has to spend time in those towns then to establish his authority. But Phil knows the mob don't like him, so he's trying to learn the Flemish language. That's Walloon. Nice, Phil, but we notice you made no attempt to learn English, you fucker. Mary will also notice a slow drip of departing Spaniards from England. Phil had left a substantial household behind, but now they're just starting to wander off. Soldiers, doctors, clergies, horses are going, so grooms wander off with the horses. Even the page boys are leaving. Gossip is out that as they are leaving, they all seem to say, thank fuck that's over and I'm never coming back to England. In come some Spanish ships. They're carrying cash to pay Phil's creditors. It's a bit like an end to Phil ever being in England. Poor old Mary. Off go those Spanish ships, with more of Phil's stuff to be taken to Flanders. Phil's letters to Mary have become what we might call curt and businesslike. No dearest darling sweetie stuff. Still, it's not dismissive. Mary should get the peace talks going. Mary should provide a naval escort to take Chuck to Spain. Mary should arrange a coronation for Phil. Tell you what, Mary, I'll travel as far as the beach if you want to hop on a water Uber to come and say good day. 19th of October, in come more Spanish ships with a message. Send all my remaining guys to Flanders except my confessor and his two friars. Oh, fuck this shit, says Mary, and we'll start getting a fleet together to go to Flanders to bring Phil back. But no, word comes in that abdication is postponed, so Phil won't be able to leave. Parliament is due, and Mary had wanted Phil to be there in a supporting role, but that's not likely now. And then it's, oh no, for Mary, but we don't fucking care. 12th of November 1555, and Stephen Garner, boo hiss, Bishop of Winchester is dead. Drive a stake through his fucking heart. Protestants will not be weeping for this guy, and nor will I. He helped stitch up Tom Cromwell, and I can't forgive the fucker. Let's have a description of him from a Protestant pamphlet. He was of swart colour, with frowning brows, eyes an inch within his head, a nose hooked like a buzzard, wide nostrils like a horse ever snuffing into the wind, a sparrow mouth, great paws like the devil, talons on his feet like a griffin, 2 inches longer than natural toes, and so tied with sinews that he could not abide to be touched, nor scarce suffer them to touch the stones. Yeah, sounds pretty, doesn't he? Now, Gardiner will be remembered as a great guy by the Catholics and a villain by the Protestants. And in England, Protestants get to write the history. It'll have to be the Mary and Ridgepole show at Parliament. Mary will write to Phil saying, look, the silly hat for you may be problematic, but I had Cook make you some of those meat pies that you like. Phil would be very happy with the pies, but that might be enough of a trade for the silly hat. Phil will write back saying, I shall only come back to England if I can jointly rule with you. I'm absolute ruler of the Spain and the Low Country, so can't possibly accept a lower position in England. Make me king, or you might not be seeing me again. Oh, no. Let's leave Mary moping around in England and see how unpopular Phil is getting on in Flanders. Pretty fucking good. The Lowlanders may have hated Prince Phil, but now he's King Phil, so he's getting tons of invites to parties. And having gotten a taste for beer in England, he's loving the Flemish beer. And the locals aren't all going nuts wanting to kill Spaniards in Flanders. It's just party, party, party for Phil. In fact, he's getting a bit of a reputation for being a bit over the top for partying. May have something to do with Madame de Allure, hot chicken, Phil groupie. Here comes an envoy from Mary. So Phil will discreetly pop Madame de Allure in his wardrobe. No, he won't. The English envoy can see that Phil's got a girlfriend. Phil at least will ask the envoy not to dob him into Mary. December, and Phil will write to Mary that she should appoint whoever the fuck she likes as new Chancellor to replace Gardiner, and yeah, might be back soon. But while he's saying that, he's sending to Spain for them to send more of his toys to Flanders. Wonder if Mary's having any parties. Yeah, wouldn't think so. Chuck is slowly going around different places to hand over stuff. Phil is not yet officially running the show in the Lowlands, and Chuck hasn't gotten around to handing over Spain. Right now, Chuck is working on handing over Sicily and Aragon, and his guys and Phil guys are not playing nicely in working out the details. This involves thousands of documents to be signed, but Chuck's got that serious gout making it hard for him to sign. Phil will say, hey, how about I just sign them on his behalf? Yeah, Chuck's guys won't have that. In the meantime, Phil isn't really allowed to do anything in Spain and the lowlands. We're all waiting to see if Chuck's signing hand will come good. Worse, of course, Chuck's sister Mary, who was supposed to abdicate from the lowlands and piss off, is hanging around, and she's showing no sign that she's ready to hand the thing over. She's ordering the council around and telling the governor what he can and can't do. Phil's just hanging out. Can't rule anything yet, and it's all boring. Let us go back to England, though, and Parliament. Not a happy Parliament, and Mary will write saying, look, I didn't even raise the idea of a silly hat for you in England. The mob were just too unruly. Phil will write back saying, why not tell Parliament to get stuffed and just give me a silly hat? That won't be happening, and we're getting lots of pamphlets going around talking about Spanish occupation of Milan and Naples and how things are absolute shit for those locals. We're disliking the Spanish even more, if that's possible. Phil can still play games, though, and right now he is looking at Edward Courtney, dickhead, with good DNA for the English big chair. Edward was in kind of exile in Europe. He supported Mary in the White Rebellion, but we just don't trust the bugger. To make it worse, Edward has decided to become a Protestant. Yeah, what would his good mate Stephen Gardiner Boohiss think about that? Courtney and his guys went to Brussels, where they ran smack bang into some Spaniards they'd met in England. Spaniards want their revenge. Courtney and his guys, some wounded, will run away to Venice. Oh, and there's a mate of Phil's in Venice. He will go to the Uzcocks, nasty fucker outlaws, and offer 1,000 crowns for a hit on Courtney. Oddly enough, the nasty fucker outlaws will report the matter to the Venetian authorities, and Courtney is saved. All I can say is that the outlaws must have hated the Spanish pretty badly to knock back a hit job. You and I, they can have a laugh at those outlaws, because a year later, Courtney will be dead anyway. He was still in Venice, and you can take your pick. Tetanus, syphilis, malaria, or just man flu. The Venetians will give him a nice monument. This high chest contains the Duke of Courtney, born in England, of which country he had a prospect of becoming the master. The supposed cause of his death was his ambition to seize the throne by marrying the queen, but the peers would not consent, preferring Philip, a royal husband. Hence it became necessary for the youth to travel through Europe, and in consequence he perished by a premature death. It is not surprising that England should lament the fate of such a prince, and droop as for the death of her pious lord. But Courtney now enjoys the happy society of heaven, while the English lament and groan without end. Yeah, nice monument there, Venetians, but I think you missed the bit where Edward Courtney was a total dick. Phil may be frustrated at not getting to rule anything, but at least he has his parties. Maybe he's just got a hostile parliament. It's like Senate Republicans just saying no, 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 and no to whatever Mary puts up. French Ambassador Noailles is egging parliament on, particularly in saying no to taxation. It seems that it was Gardiner Boohiss who was the one who could coax parliament along with the carrot and stick stuff, but Mary might not have got the gift on that. On top of that, she has taken on a lot of Gardiner's workload. Mary will have a go at a kind of joint sessions of Commons and Lords, telling them that the bills presented were necessary in keeping with the good order of the Crown and the restored Church, and were part of a mission from God. Some of the bills will then be passed, but the last one recalling exiles from France under the threat of land forfeiture will be hotly disputed. We hate anything with even a hint of land resumption, even if it's for people we hate. Sir Anthony Kingston, MP for Gloucestershire, will lock the guys in until the bill is defeated. Then he'll be tossed in the summer for being a dick, and Parliament is dissolved with lots of unhappiness. Yeah, look, it's really bad stuff taking land back from nobles and then tossing MPs into the slammer for voting. Rumours are out that Phil will be getting a silly hat and the English are once again restless. A truce between France and the Empire will be signed, and we're now sure that Phil will use his idle troops to come and belt us up and take over the place. To make it worse, there's a pamphlet doing the round saying, oh fuck, this again. Teen King Ted is alive and well and living in France and just waiting for a rebellion so he can come back and be our glorious king. February 1556, and here's a guy in London saying, yeah, he's Ted Six. He'll be hung, but he had managed to get a group of dissidents together. There will be a rebellion in Ireland to keep us on our toes. The pamphlets, books, rhymes, ballads, plays, and whatever about Mary and Phil are ramping right up. There is no respect for the Queen. It's not only funster satirical stuff. We have serious ballads now about our glorious Protestant martyrs. There's a song that includes the names of 75 burned humans from 1555, and these guys are all heroes as opposed to the evil priests who do the burning. Some of this will be bullshit to stir up the mob, like one about a poor girl who gave birth as the flames were hitting her, and the poor innocent babe died in the flames with her. Yet, always great propaganda to have innocent babies being killed. To make it worse, Mary has just burned two top guys. Nicholas Ridley, former Bishop of London, and our old mate Hugh Latimer. Yeah, he's finally gone to the flames. They were burned together, and our Archie Tom Cranmer, who's still in the slammer, was let out to watch. Nicholas Ridley was the guy who persuaded Teen King Ted to do some housing for homeless women and children. This burning will go wrong. Latimer will say, be of good comfort, Master Ridley, and play the man. We shall this day light such a candle, by God's grace in England, as I trust shall never be put out. With that, we toss in the match, and Latimer will go, woof! One of those burnings like you see in movies. Lots of flame, and that takes the oxygen right out of Latimer's lungs, so he probably suffocated reasonably quickly. Still very painful, but yeah, at least it was quick. Ridley's fire was badly made, so it's going to be the slow agony for him. Ridley's brother-in-law will try to help out by tossing on more firewood, but it's just his feet and legs that will burn for a while until, eventually, he will die. There should be a metal cross somewhere in Broad Street, Oxford, to show you where they died. In Cambridge, we'll get Ridley Hall Theological College in 1881 to train Anglican magicians, and Ridley College in St. Catharines, Ontario, Canada, in 1859. Even in Australia, we've got Ridley Melbourne Theological College, and lastly, a church in Welling, London, dedicated to Ridley. Now, Ridley didn't get that much of a mention from me with the English Reformation, but one of his ideas was really worthwhile. How English had gotten the churchy types out of the government stuff. And, yeah, Mary's looking to stupidly bring that back. The problem was that Henry put himself in charge of the churchy stuff. Ridley proposed that there should be a separation of church and state. Oh, fucking spot on, Ridley. The church and the state are absolutely different entities with different purposes, and one should not be trying to run the other. These days, I think we should be making a case that corporations should stay the fuck out of government on the same basis. They exist for entirely different reasons. And these guys who say I should run the government because I'm really good at business are talking out of their total ass. Business and government are totally different. Being good at one does not necessarily make you good at the other.
Trump has a new game. What is it?
Mr. Trump.
Is it an airline? A new convention?
Yes. Mr. Trump.
My new game is Trump, the game.
Trump, the game.
Trump steaks are by far the best tasting, most flavorful beef you've ever had. Truly in a league of their own.
Even worse if you pick a guy that pretends to be good at business, but is just good at self-promotion. Back to the story where Mary has just killed a couple of popular reformers, and we really aren't happy with that. The council have been getting word of plots on a reasonably regular basis. Now they're getting them on a very regular basis, and some are sounding like they're pretty genuine and a real threat. Our ambassador in France is writing to say there's a plot in France to have Mary deposed and a head off. Worse, the word is that the chief plotters are former supporters of Mary. Fortunately for Mary, one of the lesser guys in this particular plot will turn traitor on the plotters and confess all to Regpole. He was to have robbed the Exchequer of £50,000, and he had a decent plan to do that. The money would then finance Hardman to take over the place. Now, the leader of this particular plot was Sir Henry Dudley, and I know what you're thinking, but you know, this guy is just a distant cousin or something to our previous Dudleys. He'd been the captain of the guard in Boulogne after Henry VIII had captured it, and stayed on after the Frenchies took it back. For some reason, King Henri liked the lad. Back to the conspiracy, and it turned out that, yes, lots of people were involved, and it looks like there was even some tacit approval from some of the councillors. I have a feeling that our Poms, having tasted the freedom of the Protestant thingy, are not really liking this Catholic stuff coming back. Apart from the standard worry of plots like this, our ruler looks weak internationally, and that's bad news for us. Somebody might decide to invade. Still, the plot was spoiled, and Sir Henry Dudley can be in exile now. Yeah, he ran away, which is what you'd do rather than get hung, drawn and quartered, isn't it? Arrests will be made, including some of the courtiers, and Mary will stop going out in public. A captain of her guard who had defended Mary against Wyatt's mob will go into the slammer. Mary is so worried about who to trust that Parliament, whose job it is to make the arrests, won't be asked to make those arrests. Mary will have her own household officers go and do the job. According to the unreliable Frenchy ambassador, one of Mary's chaplains even had a crack at killing her. Mary is writing to Phil, saying, "I'm surrounded by enemies and not going to come out of my bedroom." To make it worse, she will now appoint Regpole to the Archie of Canterbury job, meaning he will be moving out of the palace. He's been her number one supporter, and he'll be going to Canterbury. "Hang on," she says, "stick around till Easter." Now that'll be Easter 1556. Noel's, the Frenchy ambassador, who was in on that Dudley plot, is writing to France saying how shit it is for Mary. She sits in a room with just four ladies who she trusts and writes long, long letters to Phil and cries a lot. Yeah, that might be a bit of bullshit there. Now, Mary has hit the big 4-0, and lady listeners, allow me to assure you that in our times, 40 is still youthful, girly stuff for you. But back then, and with Mary's sickness and depression and the pressure of government and knowing there's lots and lots of people wanting to kill you, then 40 might mean you are a bit past your use-by date. Phil hasn't hit 30 yet, and, oh yeah, he's still partying hard in Flanders. Mary would probably realise she is no competition for Phil's lifestyle or his mistress. And, of course, there is the overriding consideration that Mary has been a total fail in the baby-making department. Her considerate friends will give her nice birthday kips. One will be Dr. Stephen's Imperial Sovereign Water, or snake oil to us. It's a nice bottle of red wine with some secret herbs and spices added and guaranteed to keep you youthful and invigorated, as well as expand your life for ages. And look, here's a book about a Venetian guy who lived to be 116. Mary then is thinking she might have a lot of mileage left under the bonnet. Phil's present will be a message saying Chuck's finally signed off on some kingdom, so she can add Queen of this and Queen of that to a title. Wish I could be there to celebrate this special day with you, but I've got to go to Antwerp for a party for Dad. I'll see you soon. Now, the Antwerp thing will be big and lengthy, and, of course, people will die in the pageants. Yeah, that's what happens, isn't it? English merchants knocked up a timber castle for a pageant. Servants at another pageant will be careless with their torches, and the thing will burn with over a dozen deaths. Letter from Phil. Wow, what a party. All finished now, but I've just got to pop into Louvain for a tick before I come back to England. 10 days later, and a letter from our ambassador will say Phil hasn't even left Antwerp yet. No, he's pissing it up on parties, living extravagantly and fending off his bankers by telling them England will be paying the bill, mate. Time passes, and Phil's still in Antwerp. March, and Phil is planning a big jousting party. Letter to Mary saying, "I can't leave. King and Queen of Bohemia are on their way to say hi." Mary to Phil, "Bring the Bohemians to England." Phil won't reply, and he's openly saying England is a dud. And we're thinking he's also suggesting perhaps Mary is a dud. Word is out that he's thinking divorce. Oh. Easter time, and Mary will get to wash the feet of the poor. 41 poor women, one for each year of Mary's life. You're thinking, thank God Mary had to do that and not me. Hold on there, my dearest listener, while I give you a bit more information. Those 82 feet had just been washed 3 times each before they got anywhere near the Queen. Some common old servant does them first to get the worst of the stench off. Then the under almoner will give him another wash, and then the chief almoner, and lastly the Queen. Still, Mary is big into the magic stuff, so she will wash each foot very carefully, then dry it very carefully, then make the sign of the cross over it, and then, oh, kiss it. Oh, dear me. And she will do that for those 82 feet while staying constantly on her knees. Those feet, incidentally, will go straight to heaven now. Their owner may or may not, but the holy feet have been saved. Feet washed, dried, blessed, and kissed. So Mary will now go around 6 times with platters of tucker. Then those ladies, having had their feet washed and a belly full of food, will get new socks and shoes. They get cloth to make a new frock and leather purses with 41 pennies in them. The oldest will also score the frock that Mary had worn for the occasion. Mary's reputation then is split. She is pious, humble, and a friend to the poor, or she is a cruel, cold-hearted, human-burning bitch. Take your pick, but I've always said humans are complicated. Even now, while she's feeling threatened, she may just dress down and turn up at somebody's house to offer a bit of help and advice. The keeper of Marylebone Forest will die. He's a nobody. But Mary will visit his widow to comfort her and pay for the kiddies to have a good education. Even out at people's manors, Mary was known to dress down and go out and chat to the servants or labourers, and they had no idea who she was. They thought she might be some serving girl turned up with some noble family. She will do the plain speaking with them, and then frequently after the visit find maybe an apprenticeship for somebody's kiddie, or just provide cash to a poor family. Mary also wants to know the state of the economy for common smelly types and what they think of justice in their area, whether they find their food or goods being taken by the nobles or even in her name. She will right wrongs when she finds them. Mary will become so noted for helping out that she starts to get letters from Europe asking for help. She will pay for the rebuilding of Siena Convent, busted up in the wars. But hang on, I haven't finished with the Easter. We've washed the feet, so it's off for some crawling to the cross, reciting the psalms while we do the magical touching of the cramp rings that are in a bowl of water, then the touching for the scrofula of the common smelly types, then confession, then the blessing and absolution, and nobody can have any doubt about her piety. Nor could anybody, not even her fiercest detractors, say she isn't regal. The very image of majesty. A magnificent queen who just happens to like burning people. Still, Mary is also a girly and therefore writes to feel like this. In as humble wise as possible, your very loyal and obedient wife, which to be I confess myself justly obliged to be, and in my opinion more than any other woman having such a husband as your highness is. Yeah, maybe our manly ego is satisfied, but it's hard to respect women who write like that. I can't help thinking that women have lost an opportunity here. We've got a woman in the absolute top job, but she's still acting like she's an inferior being to a man. Has she met men? So what is the state of play for man and wife? That term tells us a fair bit. My mob are man. Lady listeners, your mob are wife. It's worse than that. We men represent baby Jesus on earth so far as marriage goes. Let's check a passage from the book, On the Duty of Husbands. If the husband be the woman's head, the mind, the father, the Christ, he ought to execute the office to such a man belonging, and to teach the woman. For Christ is not only a saviour and restorer of his church, but also a master. Yeah, so you little ladies don't need to think. That's what we men do for you. And never forget, we are your master. Reg Powell, that well-known supporter of gender equality, will have Mary put this in her prayers about Phil. A man who, more than all other, in his own acts and guidance of mine, reproduces thy image whom thou didst send into the world in holiness and justice. Yeah, that's all well and good, but Mary may not be seeing Phil as Christ-like just at the minute. Is the marriage on the rocks? We'll have to wait till next week. Bit of Blind Boy Fuller there to get us into some historical fiction. I've been catching up on the TV series and stuff that there's not much history about, so you know it's going to be invention. And there you go, you can just relax and be entertained. So there's one there, Marco Polo, and that features Mongols, of course, so how can you go past Mongols? Made by the Weinstein Company. So there are tons and tons and tons of bare-naked ladies in this, let me tell you. Must be the Guinness Book of Records for most number of bare-naked ladies. But gentlemen remain fully dressed at all times, which is as it should be. Nobody wants to see that shit. Marco Polo's just some good fun in the court of Kublai Khan. Then there's, of course, the last season of Vikings, although they previously said there was a last season, but this one does seem to be the last season. Lots of people are being tidied up and sent to Valhalla for their eternal reward, or until that wolf eats the universe or whatever's going to happen there. And lastly, marvellous little six-episode thing called Barbarian. Now, this is on Netflix, which I started to watch on Netflix, but it's dubbed. Can't bear it. Can't bear it. Germanic barbarians with American accents. No, doesn't do it for me. So I found one in the original German and Italian with subtitles, and that suits me a lot better. This is the story of the Germanic general Varus and his German auxiliary who turns rogue on Varus and lures three legions into the German forest where the Germans just did it. So just rollicking good fun. And a nice little easy lesson for us. The easy lesson being divide and conquer, because that's what the Germans did. They kind of divided those three Roman legions into nice little bite-sized pieces and then did them. And on the other hand, the Germanic tribes at the time were totally disunited. So Arminius had a double thing going. Divide the Romans while uniting the Germans, and then the Germans just kick ass. So there you go, three little TV series if you're interested in those. Knock yourself out. But for us, it's just a matter of what we go out with. And what about we go out with the marvellous Ukraine outfit Daka Braka and their song Monarch. Hope to see you next week. Bye.
Сам пошел плясать, сам пошел плясать. Наплясався, наигрался, с доброй волей. Разбежать, скочит на крыльцо, дары у кольцо. Монах на коне садится, пит монах.